interrupting the current neo-Ucronial. Climate change, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 576. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed, which should be as good as gold. And in using gold, again, we just don't stare at it, proposed U.S. bill would eliminate federal taxes on gold and silver. Stubbornly high inflation has taken its toll on consumers' purchasing power. Listen very carefully between the two different types of jurisdictions here. Consumers' purchasing power. However, there is a growing political push to give U.S. citizens new options to protect their wealth through gold and silver bullion. While there has been a growing trend at the state level to recognize gold and silver as legal tender, legislation has now been introduced at the federal level, adding further weight to gold's and silver's role as important monetary metals. On May 8th, U.S. Representative Alex Mooney, he reintroduced the Monetary Metals Tax Neutrality Act, H.R. 8279, a piece of sound money legislation that proposes removing all federal income taxation from gold and silver coins and bullion. Quote, "My view, which is backed up by the language in the U.S. Constitution, is that gold and silver coins are money and are legal tender," Representative Mooney said in a statement. The legislation is backed by the Sound Money Defense League, Money Metals Exchange, and free market activists who have said that the proposed changes, quote, "would clarify that the sale of exchange of precious metals, bullion, and coins are not to be included in capital gains, losses, or any other type of federal income calculation. Gold and silver would be treated as non-entity for tax purposes, putting it on par with the U.S. dollar." And here's the punchline to this. Federal theft and ongoing plunder and fraud. Under current tax laws, the Internal Revenue Service classifies gold and silver as collectibles in the same category as artwork, Beanie Babies, and baseball cards. If we can get past that, I don't even see how we've allowed this as a people. And that fraud that subjects the monetary metals to a discriminatorily high long-term capital gains tax of 28%. If they're indeed U.S. money, it seems there should be no taxes at all. So why are they taxing these coins as collectibles, Mooney said. Well, there's the fraud. And this is the whole point. And they were taxing a problem against the fraud, the fiat. At the same time, the League argued that the capital gains on precious metals are not real gains in value. Quote, "It is often a nominal gain that simply results from inflation created by the Federal Reserve and the attendant decline in the Federal Reserve note dollars purchasing power," the League said in a statement. It actually covers and adds to the loss of buying power the Congress agreed to cause y'all in 1913, inventing the Fed. One of the last things it did while people were preparing for Christmas in 1913. Those Grinches. We don't need no stinking Grinches, it seems to me. We need to get those guys gone. Lots of stories behind when this law was enacted. It wasn't done in the dead of night. It was done right near the end, right before the Christmas recess in open Congress. U.S. inflation is not caused by CEOs of grocery stores or by outside world leaders. It's caused by the Federal Reserve and federal policy, said J.P. Cortez, executive director of Sound Money Defense League, in a statement. The federal government has a responsibility to remove disincentives for people seeking alternatives to the Federal Reserve note dollar to protect their savings. As I've been saying, go to alternatives. The federal bill comes as a growing number of states are recognizing gold and silver as legal tender. Last month, Nebraska became the 12th state to pass legislation to remove capital gains taxes on sales of gold and silver. Alabama approved a version of this policy earlier this year. A policy now, listen very carefully. Arizona, Arkansas, and Utah approved similar measures in recent years. So the answer is to end the Fed. And it's a magic eight-ball monopoly over your lives, as I've been suggesting, and this is now not just an idea that is just sitting there. You can do your part if you are interested in this. And I think most people need to be, if you look at the so-called economy, by starting here with the support such legislation right now to stop this extortion, the federal civil right of exaction, as I keep defining it for you, in the law, 42 U.S.C. 1981, go read it, against a monetary metal, and give yourself that alternative to avoid the planned economic crash. And if you're in a state that has already done so, begin again to use monetary metals. Get in practice with it. You have to do that. It's not going to be so simple. However, I think merchants will be likely, if not already, receptive to this idea. And if you get knowledgeable just a little bit, you'll find out why it's important to have this separation. Remember, it is in the Constitution that states can mint coins. And so this is the silver and gold, and that's been reserved to them as well, or not necessarily reserved, but allowed. So this is the alternative, as I keep explaining, for us to be looking at. Again, we could have the phrase, you know, the shout out, make monetary metal great again. MMGA may not roll off the tongue as well as MAGA, but it doesn't sound like Gaga. So maybe that's a better way to go. But to begin to mint again at the state level. Try to make BTMA sound good. No, really, not in trying to pronounce it, but the sound real money makes in your pocket. Sound money, real money. Get it? Iowa, Georgia, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas also considered income tax exemptions in 2024 with several approving bills across multiple committees and chambers. And I think I saw that Missouri just enacted a law as well. As I responded to Missouri Freedom Initiative, congratulations, can't be coming soon enough. Right in line with what I've been trying to say we need to do is people, you know, gold and silver is people money. It's not system money. It's not fiat. It's not paper. It's not the system of paper, which is all controlled by those who make it up, whether they print it out of so-called thin air, or whether they create fancy, fantastical schemes, like even fraud to monetize it, or insurance and to monetize that. So meanwhile here, of all these states, Kentucky became the 45th state to end sales taxes on gold and silver. So I'm not sure what all those mean, except if I remember correctly, there would be so many states that come together could change a constitution here. So as we put that in our little mind here, maybe we can get people back on as important for themselves, at least. But I would think that right now would be to strike while the monetary metals are hot, because it may be the last chance before being thrown into the Siberian panopticon pokey with no get-out-of-jail card, free or otherwise, and with 45 states on guard. Maybe it's time for a constitutional amendment to permanentize, prohibit the federal government from interfering with the money of the people, as it did way back in Roosevelt's time, right after the set up and take down around the so-called depression. Which all that interference itself is of the species. We need to insulate it, the gold and silver coin, to the people. Seems to be that it's not. It seems to be that it shows to be a national security concern for those of us taking stock in what the value of this gold and silver is really, that we really haven't been using. I don't think it's in our psyche much anymore. Why it's going to be a little bit of a difficulty to bring back. But I think once people start doing it, they'll start to see the error of our ways in allowing the Fed to rule our lives and to not make sure that we also had the alternative to do so. And so what I find interesting is when you find out the gold and silver coin that the people would have is that national security interest. It kind of exposes the extensible excuses the federal government is using for national security, which is right now, underneath the fiat, is to cover such things as genocide or, in fact, your destruction if we watch this thing roll out. So, again, the setup plan. They knew this fiat wouldn't last much more than 100 years. And it's maybe going a little bit longer than that, right? And so this is the time to change it. But they're hoping you're not paying attention. They think they're going to go to this digital thing. But like I've told you, it's vulnerable, destroying digital anonymity isn't going to be a good thing either. There's new attack leaks, VPN traffic using rogue DHCP servers. We see here now, again, if you get into a digital Siberian panopticon, the vulnerabilities are high. They're planned into that so that they will, you're always on pins and needles about whether your life is stable or not. As they slowly take it all away. Anyway, again, austerity, shared responsibilities to the community. It won't be to you ultimately. If everything doesn't line up down the sustainability track, it's likely not going to be agreed to. And when you're on a digital switch, that's as fast and easy as it's going to be to control everybody. A new attack dubbed Tunnel Vision can route traffic outside of VPN's encryption tunnel, allowing attackers to snoop on unencrypted traffic while maintaining the appearance of a secure VPN connection. The method, described in detail in a report by Leviathan Securities, relies on the abuse of dynamic host configuration protocols, DHCP, option 121, which permits the configuration of classless static routes on a client system. The attackers set up a rogue DHCP server that alters the routing tables so that all the VPN traffic is sent straight to the local network or a malicious gateway, never entering the encrypted VPN tunnel. Quote, our technique is to run a DHCP server on the same network as the targeted VPN user and to also set out DHCP configuration to use itself as a gateway, reads the report. When the traffic hits our gateway, we use traffic forwarding rules on the DHCP server to pass traffic through to a legitimate gateway while we snoop on it. The security researchers note that this vulnerability has been available for exploitation by bad actors since at least 2002, but there are no known cases of active exploitation in the wild. The curious word there, known cases. Known. And if it's not, and they're exploiting it, and they're really intelligent, they're not telling anybody either. So as your representatives in the House of Compromised are gleefully pressing on to capture everyone in the Siberian Panopticon, where everyone but you has control of your token citizen digital ID wallet, I think it's time is now to make the transition to silver and gold coin and start using it. Get familiar with it really quickly. Don't hesitate. Again, it's hand-to-hand exchanges. It's not digitizable, if you will. You can. You can call it a Bitcoin. You can call it digital gold, or you can say that's nonsense. I'm going to go back to where it was safe for people. And gold and silver will help us in that regard. There's other metals that can be working. Again, putting our mind toward the gold and silver, it's already printed. We don't have to make that up. Don't reinvent the wheel. But as we get familiar, then we move into other phases that we protect ourselves. Otherwise, they're going to communalize this, and it'll be going through that digital panopticon. Understand that the report, the DHCP servers, when you have someone who understands where the signal's going, they could be the malicious actor. And we're seeing that these companies, carriers, the backbone is sitting right there to do that. So take cognizance of all these things that are going, so-called leaks, the fines that are being paid, we'll be hear about these are notices of how vulnerable each one of us is in that digital world when we could is simply just understand gold and silver coins, get our states to start minting again, make mining great again, get people to get out and get mining, minerals, that they can return for money that is more stable long term and not able to be, and make it so that it can't be messed up, you know, interfered with, discriminated against by the federal government or the state itself, which I would say I can bring that through the obligations of the state to support gold mining, silver mining, metal monetary mining relative to the land disposals. It's an obligation on the state to do so. And if we look at the Constitution where it says that states can mint coins, I think that's inherently what they were actually meaning. Why? Because the land disposal for minerals was to the state. Not to the state. It was to state law. It's to the private people that were able to claim the land. But that was an obligation of the disposal. So there's a whole different track I've been telling you that sits there. Whether or not there's enough of us to be able to have people understand that are the occupiers and show how they're wrong and being able to have enough force and effect to do something about it, I don't know. I do know I have the insight. I do know I see a path, and it's written in the black and white. Again, we're not making up a new idea. We're not even reinterpreting anything. It's not our, most of the time you don't hear me talk about my opinion at all. I want to repeat what I know is out there black and white for people to find. And that starts to give us a foundation. The black and white is not so easily, Vince, easily changed. And so this is part of also the Achilles heel relative to something maybe like the silver and gold. You have to get it in writing, otherwise it's not really recognized. The government did a bad thing to people when it started to tax. In other words, it was offsetting a problem that gold would expose. And to mitigate that, they charged 28 cents. Or, excuse me, 28%. Not cents. 28%. And so we see, if we know how to look through this, then you'll recognize what the government's actually doing in the war against us for a long, long time. And it's in the economy as well, which is the next phase, a different type of a relationship on top of the attack of economy, which is austerity. They call it prosperity, but it's shared responsibility to the commune. And they keep track of it through that blockchain and your digital token citizenship. I'll get those words. But as we move on here, another astonishing thing, finally, it only took 4.5 years to figure it out for most people. Those that withstood the bioweapons attack at warp speed are alive to hear that AstraZeneca withdraws COVID vaccine worldwide. I hope a lot of you balked at that title, but we're going to read through it anyway. I won't say it much till near the end after I set this up in the story. The company found itself in hot water. It was supposed to be cryogenics, wasn't it, to preserve all that? But anyway, found itself in hot water following allegations that the jab can cause blood clots in rare cases. And they're going to always put this tag on it. I'll make a comment to that here in a moment. We'll get through this. AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals Company has announced the withdrawal of its COVID-19 vaccine, from global markets, claiming the drug has been sidelined by alternatives. The development comes after the drug manufacturer recently admitted that the vaccine can cause potentially fatal blood clots. Now, all the reports keep adding this in rare cases tidbit. And if it was that rare, it wouldn't be a problem. I can just tell you that. And that's why they were relying on that phrase to everybody. If you think less rare side effects are a problem, listen to the end of any pharmaceutical ad for the side effects exonerated by that oral disclosure to show you that that's what this is not. So how is Pfizer any different? Likely not, but you'll see how they are focusing in. They get rid of some of the players, and they're focusing in on a few that are going to be in the news, if you will, going into the future. And the narrative is being established right here. Shortly after the rollout, AstraZeneca found itself at the center of a controversy over numerous Western countries suspended the use of its vaccine over fears that it may have caused some patients to develop blood clots. However, EU health officials at the time insisted that the risks, the benefits of the inoculation still outweighed the risks. And so what did they do? They translated a non-issue, irrelevant point, trying to cover what they didn't do in the duty and obligations of the federal, of the health officials from the beginning, as I talked to you about local communicable disease law. They're completely beyond that here. And they need to be, because they're guilty if you go to the place where you're supposed to get what they were supposed to have done, which would have made this a non-starter from the beginning. In recent months, the drug maker has been fighting an uphill battle, legal battle, with a class action lawsuit claiming that AstraZeneca vaccine is defective and less safe than expected, the story I read, I believe, last week. Plaintiffs have insisted the vaccine has caused thrombosis with the thrombocytopenia syndrome, TTS, a rare condition in which a person has blood clots, which can reduce blood flow, combined with a low platelet count, which can cause difficulties in stopping the bleeding. TTS caused by the vaccine, is believed to be linked to several dozen deaths in UK alone, with hundreds of others suffering serious injuries. While the company initially denied a link between the condition and the use of the product, it admitted in court documents submitted to the UK High Court last February, that the AZ vaccine can, in very rare cases, cause TTS, adding that the causal mechanism is not known. It also claimed that the vaccine has an acceptable safety profile. So AstraZeneca lied to the court in not explaining it didn't make a vaccine. Notice what is missing from this discussion, as I started to point out, just touched a little bit, that none of the mRNA bioweapons stops transmission, a requirement of a vaccine in all local communicable disease law. All the folks of you that you sent me emails working that out, especially with that habeas, you were showing me and you were seeing it. None of them would say that it would stop it. And I said, that's not a vaccine right there. I don't have to argue any farther. Now, to clarify, I exposed early on that the officials knew of this failure. Again, their ignorance of the law is no excuse. And showed where they were attempting to change that in some places. They were trying to alter this requirement. Most didn't, though. And the fact that the change proves these bioweapons were known to fail, the law holds standard, and so under communicable disease law, so the bar is or will be lowered. As I was talking to you then, they need to drop that requirement. And I told you about some of the rules as well and how they were doing that and to allow for the interference. And we found some states that had already started to do that then. They needed to change this requirement in a vaccine because these were bioweapons because they couldn't do what they were supposed to under that law. And they needed to do something other than to be the weapon under Title 50, as I was explaining. So it would have never happened if people would have done the duty and nobody checked the promulgated rules in those states that they did. If they would have checked, they would have found that they were without a faithful compliance with their state legislation. The administration of the law was being done wrong in those states that did change it. In fact, I think Tennessee was one of them. That was one of the cases. Again, the Bar Association covered that up top to bottom, judicial and administrative law in that state. As AstraZeneca asserted that the vaccine had an acceptable safety profile, the court was lied to by omission. Neither did it look to see if intending justice that there is no vaccine evidence pursuant to local communicable disease law. But likely the plaintiff's attorneys didn't insist that they actually prove that. So you notice it's a nebulous discussion and they get to deny, but they don't have to show a basis. And I've been telling you, that's the foundation you need to be coming from the beginning. On the other hand, if AstraZeneca evidence, even a bit of candor here, admitting because the jabs had no dual use relative to the communicable disease law, that when they produced, what they produced was a bioweapon, then the causal mechanism would be known, another fraud of omission and fraud upon the court. That's two things. Those are two different additional violations, fraud and fraud on the court. Fraud is open, is the fraud, is the wrong, and the fraud on the court is that you'll never reach justice in an action that was done. There's no justice that can be made by the court if you presume the court to be good. But the courts never took the equity side and looked, and they're to look beyond what they're being handed. So the court wasn't diligent to do justice that way, to catch what the guy here behind the woodshed could see with a summary reading of communicable disease law, wherever it was found globally. This is not a hard one. And this is what it just exposed to me. I thought we were going to see it. Either everybody was going to do the job and we can sing the high praises to so-called democracy, or we were going to find everybody wrong. And we saw that, but no one knows that. No one really saw it. They didn't know what they were looking at, except for those of us behind the woodshed. It's pretty fascinating until this day. I will not get anybody who will even go back and look. While they all complain, it's like a car accident. They don't go find out where everybody left the road. No, they run down and watch and take pictures and get all the graphs and about the carnage that this thing caused. Question, making comments like it's a vaccine. But bioweapons kills, not vaccines. At least not normally. Anyway, this is a pretty straightforward. AstraZeneca now pulled. Another front against people in the U.S., in the U.S., U.K. intention to a world at war we heard about last week. This front attacking health and maybe a news of a victory with a tactical retreat in the refortification of the enemy of another made-up existential threat coming, as they've been running a long time with these things. Cancer is our new COVID, Pfizer CEO said. So to all you cancer patients, watch out. They're going to bring the same stuff. It's not, none of this has really been shown, but anyway, the cancer is the new COVID. Look what they did to the world with so-called COVID. Remember, COVID was not the infectious agent. It was a name given to a set of symptoms which was suspiciously just like the flu. And we saw some of that. I predicted that, watched it as it happened, that the flu would be substituted, the numbers for the flu, and you watched it. You watched it all happen. And I did that from way back in December of 2019 when I was explaining the documentation of all the reports that were coming out of all that serious flu that had been building for years before it. So this was not really that hard to see if we were just open and aware to do it. But the U.S. pharma giant is getting better at oncology since demand for its COVID vaccines has collapsed. So first off, congratulations to those informing others of the dangers of the bioweapons made, promoted, and marketed by the United States. You've interdicted a demand, but the war is not over. Pfizer here is taking its Trump-instituted plunder and running, retreating to a more sensational fortification. The company expects to score big on a blockbuster cancer drug, Bourla said, as the pharma giant seeks to reverse its post-COVID business decline. The pandemic brought a record revenue to the company. In 2022 alone, Pfizer's total sales amounted to $157 billion, with a B, a bravo, 157 bravos, with its COVID vaccine. Again, how different was it from AstraZeneca? It wasn't. It's not a vaccine, accounting for $37.8 billion. And its antiviral treatment pill, Paxlovid, bringing in another $18.9 billion, if you didn't think organized crime wasn't big bucks. The Covey swindle made them big bucks. Billions served, to name a motto of a fast food joint. Boy, at warp speed, they just overdid that, didn't they? Up and continuing to exploit the fear, we hear Pfizer announced its shift toward cancer treatment in late 2023. Quote, nothing scares people all over the world more than cancer because it affects everyone, Bourla said at the time. I hope we will be successful in our mission, and I hope that I'm optimistic that in the next 10 years we will see significant advancement, he added. But what is that mission? Preying on the fearful, like the great COVID swindle? Can't be curing cancer in the war against health, since he didn't mention it, did he? What would a significant advancement then be, is anyone's guess, I'm sure. Bourla is a bioweapons mission creep in wartime. We better keep our eyes on what's going on here. As I've said, there's going to be the narrative. We just learned how fast a narrative can be picked up and swept, and no one, I say no one, checked first to see if it was lawful, if it was recognizable. No, we just ran with the fear, and they know it. He says it right there. And he said that back in 2023. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they read everybody like a book, and they knows them better than they knows themselves, those people. And that was a shame, especially those that wouldn't turn and still don't turn and get behind the woodshed, because that was answered so quick, and I don't understand what the point was, and I really am disappointed we, as a people, taking all this time later, but as a people, we didn't see right then, being an aware population, to really say, oh, here we go, hey, they did this wrong, all you folks, to the pokey. Not we go, they go. We don't go to the hospitals and get killed, no. We don't have to suffer the nonsense, the slings and arrows of everybody that got mind controlled, no. We don't do any of that. We as a population stand strong, and in an objective basis. And we don't let those that know us better than ourselves get an advantage. What I've been particularly telling you all about and how to build tools to be able to deal with these things, even when you don't know you have your own vulnerabilities. You know they're there. Admit to them. Now, what are they? Start to analyze for that. You don't fret over them. You start to solve. And the things that you don't quite know or get, you put a buffer, especially of time, in response. Give yourself a space. And I've told you all about how to do that, where to go, and a lot of times when you're dealing with officials, it's all going to be in the law. that's really how simple some of this is. It may not be so simple to understand. It may make your eyes dry out and bleed, but it's necessary. And they made it like that so that you wouldn't want to do it. And I found out it's just a learning curve. And once you build into it and start applying it, you go to your own school of hard knocks, I guess, in a way, if you do. But I say don't do it with any jeopardy. And so you start, it's a really kind of an interesting learning system for yourself. And it's in earnest, and you're looking to essentially free yourself in the future, ongoing. And this was one of them. I'm, like I said, I thought this was going to be it. I thought this was going to be so clear for everybody. Boy, did I underestimate the absence of people. Amazing. Cancer, it may be in the interim, but hide your ventilators later, folks. After positioning military biolabs around the globe, U.S. officials urged biodefense buildup. Russia's radiological, chemical, and biological defense troops have spent over 2 years studying and publicizing sensitive documents and analytical materials on the extent of the Pentagon, CDC, and U.S. biotech firms' funding for unethical and potentially illegal military biological research in Ukraine and around the world. The U.S. biodefense planners are preparing to release a bombshell report calling on all levels of the U.S. government to radically improve national biodefense measures and create a national strategy to address global biological threats. Well, just right there, interject. If there are global biological biolabs are making the things, I just say they are the threat. The United States is that threat. That Russia is saying, I know we can say, oh, Russia, United States is the war. The Russians went into Ukraine to find the truth for themselves because they were going to be the target. And this was not something they just found up, dug up, and then made up. This was in the record. As I did, Tbilisi, coming to my mind. The Luger Institute over there, I think in Georgia. I mean, that was years ago I put that down. I said in the memory hole, I actually put that down in the X, Twitter. The document seen by ahead of a publication was put together by a bipartisan commission on biodefense, a panel of former high-ranking U.S. officials and lawmakers, including senior former Clinton, Bush, and Obama administration staff. The commission created in 2014 to, quote, provide for a comprehensive assessment of the state of the United States biodefense efforts, has called its new report the 2024 National Blueprint for Biodefense. The blueprint, in quotes there, the blueprint highlights the growing risks stemming from the outbreak of infectious diseases, bioweapons research, and lab leaks, predicting that the number of the biothreat incidences will increase over time and urging policymakers to make major new investments in biodefense. Quote, we're not putting enough emphasis on getting ahead of these biological threats, Bipartisan Commission of Biodefense Executive Director Asha George said. The committee is asking the Washington to create a unified federal biodefense budget and multi-year funding for programs as part of an agenda featuring 36 separate recommendations from the creation of a congressional working group to biodefense reviews once every 4 years to amendments to the 1944 Public Health Services Act to, quote, produce a research and development plan for reducing pathogen transmission in built environments. Wow, what's that really saying? But they know it's about transmission, and they know it can't be stopped. And this technology doesn't stop it. Why? Because they're making bioweapons. They'll make them virulent in order to not kill somebody. They tell you they're doing that so they can protect you. But you saw what they did. It's like watching Russia dismantle all the West's state-of-the-art armor. Maybe not the best because they're holding some stuff back, but it's not the best isn't going to be much better. You're watching the lie out there. But I keep telling you, it's coming home. So they're telling us, this is the blueprint of what's coming in the future. Endless disease. Endless. And the United States is on the forefront of it. But moving into that act, adjusting that act, moving bioweapons into a public health policy seems curious, don't you think? And as curiously, the panel's recommendations also feature a section on emerging astrobiological threats, warning about the intersection of space exploration and infectious disease, and as and one of the possibilities of space-based microorganisms being brought to Earth and posing a threat to the planet's, quote, human, animal, plant, or ecosystem health. The threats are closer to home. Additional details on the contents of the report have yet to be publicized. Remember, this is a blueprint. What's out there, folks? However, based on the, what's out there that they can say they thought said was out there? Disease X, it doesn't matter. Endlessly, it's coming. However, based on the information made available, it will offer little, if any, data on the U.S. government's own role in creating, manipulating, and spreading biological threats globally, starting with the National Institutes of Health gain-of-function research, which may have sparked the global COVID-19 pandemic, to the operation of dozens of military-grade biolabs around the world, including in Ukraine, Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Russia's radiological, chemical, and biological defense troops warned in January that Washington's goals in the military biological domain are multifold, ranging from the creation and manipulation of the causative agents of particularly dangerous infections in regions of the world that are strategically important to the United States, to efforts to achieve global superiority in biomanufacturing, biological monitoring, and the expansion of potentially unethical and illegal military biological research outside of U.S. jurisdictions. And that was the other thing. They don't do it here because it's illegal here, unlawful. RCBD Troops Chief Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov has indicated that the U.S. military bioresearch program, quote, consists of a government agencies and private contractors, including representatives of big U.S. pharmaceutical companies, and that through the organs of the executive branch and legislative framework is being created to finance military biological research directly from the federal budget. In turn, Kirillov said, quote, guarantees provided by the state attract funds from non-governmental organizations, including Clinton, Soros, and Rockefeller foundations. Funded by the House of the Compromise to your demise, folks, psychopath eugenicist privateer Bourla is sure to have not been speaking of curing cancer then, while waiting in the wings to re-enter the next episode from stage leftist and courageously battling space-based microorganisms, it sounds, that no one has ever heretofore heard of. Sounds like a movie. And yet it's going to be real. And there's nobody going to stop it seems, because hardly anybody stopped it during the great COVID swindle, which was the big experiment. It wasn't just the juice. It was the people's response. And I'm going to say 99.999% of the people failed, notwithstanding that 20% of them didn't take the jab. I see it today. No one will recognize how to stop the thing before it began. They all want to be feeling really good about how to identify the carnage at the end of it, that they didn't take the jab. That's not the kind of thing as a society that society is going to survive on, I can just tell you. Moving into, again, what did that start up? That did the digital ID, all that great COVID swindle type stuff. They want to know where you're at. We have the information, the bio labs. They take down your health. They now know digitally your DNA. They can, especially, this is what Russia was concerned about, the Slavic people, where they were studying how to take those out, particularly, and nobody else. And this is, we may have seen some of that with the great COVID swindle, relative to different types of genetics that were hit more hard than others at the time. And I don't, again, remember all that. I just remember water on the bridge behind the woodshed, just finding it and passing it on and hoping something was going to come of it. And a few of you did something, a lot of us didn't. I hope we learned a little bit, although I'm not seeing it quite yet. The senators, the digital information is going to be important. How to find you, how to seek you out. Point out you're the one, you're the vector. You're the one that has the pathogen from space. Car companies are giving location data to police without a warrant. The Democrat senators call for the FTC to investigate 8 automakers for handing over users' location data with only a subpoena rather than a court-issued warrant. Senators Ron Wyden, D. Oregon, and Edward Markey, D. Massachusetts, publicized the findings in a Tuesday letter that urges the Federal Trade Commission to investigate the car makers BMW, Kia, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Nissan, Subaru, Toyota, and Volkswagen. These companies are not just less protective of their customers' privacy, their policies directly contradict the public commitment the companies made to and invited the FTC to enforce. Listen very carefully what's going on here. Made and invited the FTC, a government agency, to enforce. As such, these companies may have engaged in deceptive conduct, which is prohibited by Section 5 of the FTC Act, the senators allege. Quote, vehicle location data can be used to identify Americans who have traveled to seek an abortion in another state, attended protests, support groups of alcohol, drug, or other types of addiction, or identify those of particular faith as revealed through trips to places of worship, the senators noted. Another concern is that the hackers or foreign spies could access the same location data from today's connected cars to snoop on consumers. That is not an idle threat that we're listening to right there. Why? I've been talking about it. I've been bringing things forward. As I've counseled you behind the woodshed, confirmation that the corporate carriers that you're going to need a phone through to be digitally connected are exploiting you at every turn. FCC issued, not my opinion, it's just in the news. We can take stock of it. We can start understanding what the dangers are. We can walk away. We can not engage. We can find the alternatives. I opened this broadcast with, they call sound money. Just bring specie. Just give me gold and silver coin like I saw in the Constitution for the states. You want to bring back some autonomy? That's where you go. You got to walk away. They're giving us the news how the companies are exploiting us that claim to be helping us and protecting us and shielding us, and they're not. FCC issues $200 million in fines for AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon for sharing location data. Now remember, we just heard that from a senator, and here we have a fine that says it is, but don't throw that senator into the good guy side. Let me show you something as we go through this. The FCC has fined the nation's largest wireless carriers millions of dollars for illegally sharing access to customers' location information without consent. Our communication providers have access to some of the most sensitive information about us. These carriers fail to protect the information entrusted to them. Here we are talking about some of the most sensitive data in their possession, customers' real-time location information, revealing where they go and who they are, said FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel. As we resolve these cases, we were first proposed to by the elite at the last administration, the commission remains committed to hold all carriers accountable and making sure they fulfill their obligations to their customers as stewards of this most private data. Don't underestimate stewards being used right there relative to sustainable development. Although I don't want to go there, I just want you to just keep that in your mind way back in the back because that's going to be in the future, way in the future. What your obligations will be being stewarded for you by these carriers. The FCC Enforcement Bureau investigations of the 4 carriers found that each carrier sold access to its customers' location information to aggregators who then resold access to such information to third-party location-based service providers. In doing so, each carrier attempted to offload its obligation to obtain customer consent onto downstream recipients of location information, which in many instances meant that no valid customer consent was obtained. This initial failure was compounded when, after becoming aware that their safeguards were ineffective, the carriers continued to sell access to location information without taking reasonable measures to protect it from unauthorized access. But notice, these millions levied at about 62 cents per violation on one calculation are not really fines more than additional costs of doing a profitable side hustle, it seemed to me. Likely the same one the car companies are running. We just heard the other thing. But it makes everyone, including the Senator Wyden, complaining about it, commending the agency for the follow-through of his complaint, look good in the plunder, keeping law and order. The upshot of all this, for those that get behind the woodshed, make sure to eliminate every permission on your phone from any access that can amass information. It's going to take some work. They didn't make this easy. Those of you that don't have a rooted phone, that you've taken out the stock OS, you're going to have to really look hard. And I think working through some problems, we just obtained confirmation. It is possible that the carrier doesn't know from the phone location of a phone that's so restricted. And then at least anecdotally putting the phone like in 4G LTE instead of your 5G, put it in 4G LTE, appears to remove the triangulation potential from the phone, because 4G only accesses one tower at a time. And if this is true, there are some things to do to limit your phone testifying against you in a court of law, essentially, is what they'll work this down, or before the tax commissioner. As well as, here, remember to disable your Bluetooth. Disable that device finding feature and the sync. Remember, Bluetooth low power is actually more pervasive than a mesh. It's a private mesh network that gets out, and they can get this information from you. It takes maybe a little bit more time, but it still happens. All these things are vulnerability leak points of all this data that's going out that they're in control over. As I said, the carriers are sitting in the prime position for it, and they're already exploiting us. And you want to turn off and block as best as we can do it, block anything that silently communicates with another device or that does not restrict access to that. And I'm saying we may have confirmation this is all workable, because in dealing with the tech and the engineers, they're coming back and saying they can't see certain things, and it's because these phones are being set certain ways, and that it's becoming a little bit of an issue. Now, that, though, thinking about it, it should be not too far-fetched to see the phones are communicating like an infectious agent causing location identity disease, it seems. On the other hand, what would seem to protect a phone from communicating to the wild would likely not protect it from the concerted effort, the carrier pinging the phone from different single towers under 4G LTE and calculating the location. Not quite as precise, but they could do it if they understood what they were trying to do from you. Most of it's not like that yet. But even 4G, I think the carrier, the actor, some government is asking about you, and even on 4LT, they'll find you from different towers, but they're not going to get it from your phone. They're not going to get this location identification to sell to somebody else to then surprise you down the road somehow. But that effort to do that by LT one tower at a time takes a lot more, it's a bunch more effort and proper execution, and that level of effort might require a warrant. But the big caveat there would be the might. So we have we just confirmed it may be possible to blind the carriers a bit from the location. It's not just that location doesn't get spread. You block everything so they can't find any of it. And so it's working. It worked at least in one phone. So we have a consideration there is all. But remember, talking about a warrant, the criminals don't need no stinking warrant. So, again, caveat sitting here about the vulnerabilities. I think I mentioned them more to show us we shouldn't be relying anything to do with the Siberian Panopticon coming and setting up against us. It starts right with the carriers, as I've been saying. It starts right from the phone. And at this point, they haven't yet blocked out these abilities to blind them a bit. And that's only presses me to say, well, then you need to learn, we'll have to learn how to root phones, get the phones that can be rooted, put OSs in them that don't have all this stuff, and do without all that other stuff just to be able to move about more freely without a surprise. But the fact is, you lock your phone down, it's not your phone giving up the information. You aren't handing anyone the keys to your kingdom. They'll have to work a whole lot more for it and maybe suffer an avoidance, if you will, if you find out it's legal. And they didn't get the warrants, and you didn't give up the information from location. You're going to have to do a little bit better job in the future. And if you understand that, like I tell you, prepare your future behind woodshed for them, you're going to be able to understand more what I'm saying here in the avoidance. And avoidance is a measure prior to plea or even after plea for evidence to get it dismissed, get it struck out, get it kept from the evidence, from the record. Because they did it wrong. It gives you this option. It's not handed to somebody else and they just believe that you've consented. So lock down your phones, because to sell your information only cost the carriers about 65 cents to steal it in return for millions more profit bucks than it costs them. And why this is such a feeble thing the agency did. But under the law, including Section 22 of the Communications Act, carriers are required to take reasonable measures. Understand this little term is going to come up here. Reasonable measures to protect certain customers' information, including location information. And these stories, these reports here, are lists of elements that you need to remember about that you can take down and use in different ways. As I was reading through them, this is one of them right here. They tell you what they're supposed to do in a couple of spots. Actually, go to the law. You'll see more. Carriers are also required to maintain the confidentiality of such customers' information, obtain affirmative express customer consent before using, disclosing, or allowing access to such information. There's three more elements of things. These obligations apply equally when carriers share customer information to third parties. And maybe this is where the legislation is in order imposing additional fines, in addition to the fines, put jail time on all this. If, quote, the protection and use of sensitive personal data such as location information is sacrosanct, as stated by Lorianne A. Egal, chief of the FCC, Enforcement Bureau of Chair of its Privacy and Data Protection Task Force, that's what we want to see. Sacrosanct, it should be inviolable, right? There's not supposed to be this question. 62 cents a violation doesn't even come close, which shows you again the caveat. There needs to be more legislation, apparently, to penalize it deeper than it already is. But maybe don't put too much in sacrosanct. Sacred, inviolable, that's what this means. As we see, Supreme Court declines to block Texas pornography restrictions. And again, a lot of these things, I'm not worried about talking about the pornography. I'm talking about what the government's doing. The pornography industry challenged the state's law age verification process, saying it places an unlawful burden on adults wishing to access content. In response, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton wrote in his own brief that the state law simply requires the pornography industry that makes billions of dollars from peddling smut to take commercially reasonable steps to ensure that those who access the material are adults. Well, where did we just hear that? Take commercially reasonable steps. That's right. I highlighted it. The last article saying companies were also to protect the sacrosanct information by the same first and third party exploitation to profit that they were allowing. But the Supreme Court refused Tuesday to block on free speech grounds to a provision of Texas law aimed at preventing minors from accessing pornographic content online. The justices turned away a request made by the Free Speech Coalition, a pornography industry trade group, as well as several companies. So as I've counseled behind the woodshed, people are presumed guilty living in an open-air prison. There are no rights but exactions, extortions of every kind. Go read it at 42 U.S.C. 1981. Understand it's municipal, federal municipal law back in Washington, D.C. But listen carefully as well in this condition that you are presumed as well to be a minor. Now, this is just the way this reads, the way it works, it's facially an impossibility as any measures required proof a minor cannot get because they require majority, competency, and capacity. What appears to be more an age discrimination and a wrongful extortion. But let's forego that incongruity, right? I mean, let's just get past that one. The challenger said that 2023 law violates the Constitution First Amendment by requiring anyone using the platforms in question, including adults. Word including is the only thing that's going to be listed as adults, nobody else. Adults, you insects. To submit personal information. One provision of the law known as HB 1181 mandates that platforms verify users' ages by requiring them to submit information about their identities. So the Supreme Court declined it as a First Amendment wrong, and this is not about minors either, but competency, capacity, of the prisoner in matters that access in the open-air prison from which there is no escape. In other words, if having capacity denied the ability to say, no, you didn't have it. And you don't have that right. The prisoner of this prison can only be presumed to have had both at one time as one of majority, but now it's denied to them as an indentured slave would be. Again, forget the pornography. Look at what the court's doing here. Look what Texas is doing. Oh, it's Republican Texan. No. Watch what's going on here. This is all building into that ID and a future they want as well. The Supreme Court is cool with the fact that it reflects the post-founding father era of the Lincolnized states of Washington, D.C., waging its ongoing war of terror in its denial of review in favor of the state of Texas. So Texans, you've been messed with. But it's for the children, right? Although the law is aimed at limiting children's access to sexually explicit content, the lawsuit focuses on how those measures also affect adults. Quote, specifically, the act requires adults to comply with intrusive age verification measures that mandate the submission of personally identifying information over internet in order to access websites containing sensitive and intimate content, the challengers wrote in court papers. Remember, these were losing. These did not persuade the Supreme Court. Understand that, too. This is not a First Amendment problem, apparently. And I think I'm trying to point out to you what it really is and why it's going to be passed on through. Specifically, the act requires adults to comply with intrusive age verification measures that mandate the submission of personal identifying information over the internet in order to access websites containing sensitive intimate content. If you didn't hear the emphasis and reframe your brain about what they're really talking about. You're indentured token citizen. This is not a freedom of speech issue, and the Supreme Court's not going to hear it as one. You better come back with some other things, as I've just kind of pointed out, if you're going to do anything against this one. But this seems like an age discrimination set where you're presumed guilty. Well, who has the right to do that? Unless you're not living in the place that you thought was a home of the free. Maybe you're in a place of freedom. But it's sacrosanct, folks, this First Amendment, isn't it right? Sacrosanct, folks. UnitedHealthcare CEO says maybe a third of U.S. citizens were affected by a recent hack. 2 months ago, hackers broke into the Change Healthcare systems, stealing and then encrypting company data. It is still unclear how many Americans were impacted by the cyber attack. Change Healthcare, folks. Hope and change. Last month, Andrew Witte, the CEO of Change Healthcare's parent company, United Health Group, said that the stolen files include the personal health information of a substantial portion of people in America. On Wednesday, during the House hearing, when pushed to give a more definitive answer, Witte testified that the breach impacted, I think, maybe a third of Americans, or somewhere of that level. So what's in your privacy wallet, token citizen? And it's gone! And another thing that's gone, Panama Papers law firm boss dies. The ex-partner of Mossack Fonseca was 71. And had been on trial for money laundering. I told you a long time ago, since Kobe Swindle, I can't stop. As soon as I see that, well, I want to know what they died of, right? But at any rate, Panamanian banker Ramon Fonseca, a senior partner of the now defunct law firm, whose records were leaked in the Panama Papers scandal that exposed the global elite benefiting from offshore accounts, has died, his lawyers told the media on Thursday. He was 71 years old. Over 11 million documents stolen from the firm's Mossack Fonseca provided the basis for a series of international investigations in April 2016, embarrassing some 130,000 people in 170 countries. I'm pausing. Are you, is your digital world coming slapping you right here? I mean, this is what starts to happen really fast when we get into that system. While Fonseca and his business partner, Jürgen Mossack, maintained their businesses was legitimate, the firm shuttered in 2018 due to irreparable damage to its reputation. Former president of Panama, Ricardo Martinelli, called his classmate Fonseca, quote, a great human being, lawyer, writer, and politician. Martinelli also claimed his successor, Juan Carlos Varela, was behind the atrocious persecution of Fonseca. Fonseca died in a Panama City hospital. The details of his medical condition were not made public, but the condition was serious enough that he could not attend the trial, a member of his legal team told the news publication. Panamanian prosecutors charged Mossack and Fonseca with concealing, covering up, and providing false information to banks for the opening of accounts and concealing ownership of assets, as well as sending the receiving funds from illicit activities in Germany and Argentina. And look what's going on in Argentina and Germany now as well in the fallout. The Panama Papers scandal affected 20 Forbes list billionaires, several Hollywood stars and famous athletes, 150 politicians, and a dozen national leaders. Icelandic Prime Minister David Gunnlaugsson, Sigmundur, resigned after the document showed his wife secretly owned offshore companies. The Prime Minister of at the time, David Cameron, who's now in the news again, whose father founded several offshore companies, refused to resign, and saying that he sold his shares before becoming Prime Minister. Among the names in the documents trove were actors Jackie Chan, Emma Watson, film director Pedro Almodarva, ex-UEFA President Michael Platini, King Mohammed VII of Morocco, King Salman bin Abdulaziz of Saudi Arabia, as well as presidents of Ukraine, Argentina at the time, Peter Poroshenko, and Mauricio Macri. And this was really big news back when, if you remember. It really opened things up as far as understanding what was going on. And I told a lot of you folks for doing what they were doing, don't complain. Go find a local state that does the same thing for you, and maybe do what the big boys do. You're going to find some benefit. Learn what you're doing, though. However, the intrigue about that, there was more intrigue than all that about what was exposed. My mind keeps going back to that Jeffrey Epstein list. We're not seeing a lot of that either. And along the same lines as these Panama Papers, this kind of exposure. But there was a report back when in 2016 that the CIA behind the Panama Paper leak, says most significant financial whistleblower at the time. And this is a little segue story, but we saw, as I relate to the world as we see changing now, it's not out of the possibility. I'm going to go ahead and allow you to hear this as I read it, and then we're going to hear, let's say, a bit of a denial that sits in the news, but understand how easy it is to manipulate people, expose people, and if you have your life on a blockchain, whether or not any of those other people, well, we should presume them innocent, they got exposed, and then they got ridiculed, which should not have happened, will be much more easy to do in view of the future that they want is one of your behavior towards social compliance to the community. And that's like a shaming thing that they'll put on you. It'll be frowned upon for a lot of the things that we're seeing built through here. But the financial whistleblower Bradley Birkenfeld, who helped expose American tax evaders hiding assets in Swiss banks, has little doubt the Panama leak scandal was crafted and orchestrated by the CIA. In an exclusive interview from Munich, Birkenfeld said that the leak of over 11 million documents from Panamanian-based law firm Mossack Fonseca is most likely not a whistleblower job, but rather an intelligence agency operation. The CIA, I'm sure, is behind this, in my opinion, Birkenfeld said, citing as evidence selective management of information exposed to the public domain that doesn't hurt the United States in any shape or form. The very fact that we see all these names surface that are the direct, quote, unquote, enemies of the United States, Russia, China, Pakistan, Argentina, and we don't see one U.S. name, why is that? Quite frankly, my feeling is that this is certainly an intelligence agency operation. That's wrong, and there's something seriously sinister behind this, Birkenfeld said. The former banker acknowledged that years ago when he worked in a Swiss bank, he was aware that Mossack Fonseca was the integral part of a worldwide offshore financial network used to avoid domestic taxes. I want to interject, avoid is not evade. He used the proper word for lawful relative to taxes. So this is the other part about it. This is all lawful. What was the big scandal? So this is, again, part of what he's saying. It should have just been a normal setup. But understand it's worldwide. Understand that people are connected. And how they get connected. Did you know about this? Did you know about how to get into this connection? No, likely not. Some of you might have. Some of you may have been in the business, so you knew. But for the most part, most people don't. Birkenfeld also pointed out that Panama firm was a relatively minor player in tax evasion schemes. So now he uses the other word, evasion. So we have avoidance and we have evasion. And they're known to be a minor player here. We knew that very well in Switzerland. I certainly knew of it, Birkenfeld said. A minor player. I wonder what a major player looks like, folks. Birkenfeld, an American citizen once employed by UBS AG and Swiss Bank, is famous for helping expose the bank's tax evasion schemes in 2009. Birkenfeld was convicted in 2008 for helping a former client at USB AG to hide his wealth from the Internal Revenue Service and spend over 2 years behind bars. Nevertheless, Birkenfeld did well. As part of the same case, the IRS awarded the former banker $104 million for aiding the investigation that resulted in UBS being fined $780 million. The bank was also forced to disclose the names of 4,700 American clients who held secret overseas accounts in Switzerland. American pressure finally put an end to the golden era of Swiss banks' dodgy financial dealings. Many of the country's banking institutions were fined billions of United States dollars for providing tax evasion assistance to U.S. citizens. Birkenfeld is now living privately in Bavaria, Germany, and is unwilling to speak to journalists. However, in the case of the Panama Papers, he made an exception. So one real quick look over here at the Panama case. Then, despite the CIA intrigue, the wiki will explain that, so, quote, John Doe, the whistleblower who leaked the documents to German journalist Bastian Obermeier from the newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung, remains anonymous even to the journalists who worked on the investigation. Quote, my life is in danger, the whistleblower told them in May 6th of 2016. Document Doe cited income inequality as the reason for the action and said the documents were leaked, quote, simply because I understood enough about the contents to realize the scale of the injustices they describe. Doe has never worked for any government or intelligence agency, is the highlight here. Contrary to what the whistleblower said and his opinion, this is more information about Joe themselves, and expressed willingness to help prosecutors if granted immunity for prosecution after SZ verified that the statement did, in fact, come from the source of Panama Papers. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists posted the full document on its website. So it's quite an intrigue. But the thing was, is that how connected people are globally and on to what and to what they're doing and how they were exposed. And this is a minor player. Again, so who's the bigger player gobbling up the little ones? And then you probably send a message, and so there's a lot more checking going on about those that are also doing it. Here, and before I move too much further, probably past the hour, this is BTW RLM 576, and you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed, as I've been trying to explain. Take responsibility for yourself. It's not that hard to do. A little bit of a run-up when we've not been undereducated or miseducated or non-educated, we get to do that our own self. And we get to tell ourselves stories if that's what we want, or else we can tell ourselves the truth, and we work from there. What we saw in the black and white and what we had to use and think and put in practice that we start to find for ourselves works. because that's the only one that's working for us is us. But regarding here more, getting even less sacrosanct, certainly than ourselves to us, when we rely on others and we listen to their words, the West has invented a magic phrase to hide its geopolitical games. The meaning of the words civil society changes depending on whether Washington is speaking about protests inside or outside American borders. What have I said about the age of euphemism? I just used the phrase last week. These euphemisms are really what they do to keep us off of balance, and they can be talking about one thing, change its name, they're talking about the same thing, and they just change the name. And so the problem is when they get you into a derogatory position and they start changing the words around and you can't track it, then they have you lost. And so this is why reading is important. The more words you hear, the more you keep in categories of lists of where they belong, who's using them, why. And that's how you start gaining that. It takes a little while. And you start to understand what you're listening to, who you're listening to, what you can see, predict the future, what they want, they intend to want, all because of the vocabulary. And I've talked to you about your vocabulary becomes a very restricted when you start to talk in the law, let's say, and what your rights are and how they're different. There's a separation between you and the government. So word games is being identified around. This meanings of the words civil society changes depending on whether Washington is speaking. The elites and mainstream media of the West are so addicted to double standards that spotting yet another one is hardly news. These are the people who have just given us genocide relabeled as self-defense, who abhor spheres of influence except when they are global and belong to Washington's, with the sidekick role of Brussels, who insist on the rule of law while threatening the International Criminal Court if it is so much as dares look their way. I need to interject. Is this not looking at two types of words? There may be a slew of words that they've shifted depending on what they're trying to do and meaning another thing. You hear it all the time. It's more and more prevalent. Not that you don't know what I'm saying. My mind focuses in on what the future that they want, the sustainable, the ESGs. The whole system around that is so deceptive because they keep changing the terminology. You don't realize they're still talking about the same thing. It's a little bit like climate change and global warming. And I mean, the terminology gets really sophisticated, so you got to be real careful to be able to keep track of it. So anybody who reads, you get to see these words, and your mind starts to pick it up and say, oh, those guys are using those words. It must be from over here. But I'll suggest you're a lot better to place them there than to not know at all. Why it's very important to be read in the subject matters that you're doing, not just listen to a voice telling you it's that way. No different than when I say, go read 42 U.S.C. 1981. Go see it. Go see those words and then think about those words. Put them in play. Get them physically on the ground. Where are they talking? From whom and what? And all that. Start to work with it. It's a little bit more work, but it's a whole different thing that develops in your mind's eye of what you're dealing with. On this point, civil society, talking about, it's another euphemism. Yet, there is something special about the latest case of Western values schizophrenia, this time about the concept of civil society in conjunction with two political struggles, one in the U.S. and the other in the Caucasus. Nation of Georgia. The different reactions to this cases of the intense public contention by the West political and mainstream media elite shows that of them, there are really two kinds of civil society. There is the vibrant variety with vibrant and almost comical cliche, ossified cliche, used by the Washington Post editorial board in EU statements and by White House spokesman John Kirby, to name only a few. It is almost as if people who had sent around a memo on proper terminology. This vibrant, good kind of civil society is to be celebrated and supported. But then there's the wrong kind of civil society, which must be shut down. The United States President Joe Biden has just expressed the essence of this attitude, quote, "We are a civil society and order must prevail." This is, of course, a bizarre misreading of the idea of civil society. Ideally, its key features are autonomy from state and the capacity to establish an effective counterweight, and if, even if necessary, to offer resistance to it. Putting the emphasis on order instead of ignorant or dishonest. In reality, civil society makes no sense, even as an ideal, if it is not granted a substantial degree of freedom to be disorderly. Understand that connection and that inhibition and limitation. Even so, civil society that is so orderly as to disturb no one is a fig leaf for the enforcement conformism and at least incipient authoritarianism. The pertinent point here is once again staggering Western hypocrisy, a West that thinks trying to storm Parliament is part of having a vibrant civil society in Georgia, cannot pass arrest, cannot mass arrest and brutalize anti-genocide protesters on its own campuses. That is, of course, also a message of Georgian Prime Minister Irakli Kobakhidze, who clearly has had enough of the absurdity. Kobakhidze objected forcefully to American false statements about the controversial draft law, as well as, more importantly, the U.S. interference in Georgian politics in general. The Prime Minister, in essence, a very plausibly for the non-naive, named and shamed Washington's habit of trying to color revolution at regular intervals. Finally, he reminded his American interlocutors about the brutal crackdown of the students' protest rally in New York City, with that the phrase clearly standing for the totality of police repression against young Americans who object to genocide, Kobakhidze turned the tables. But civil society used to be a key concept for projecting Western soft power by, in essence, subversion and manipulation. It was so useful because it is ideologically charged, was so powerful that in a mere invocation stifled resistance. Now, by displaying how it handles its own civil society at home, the West is ruining yet another useful illusion. And this is a big deal, this perception management. And the United States may, on one hand, may have messed up here, may screwed up. On the other hand, what are they planning for? What are they playing to? And again, on these ruining the notices of the day, another useful illusions. I've seen relative to this dynamic in the world. What's a war? What is it? Who's fighting? Who's not? I've seen the celebritudes on ex-Twitter. They're adamant that Ukraine is a proxy war for the West against Russia. Now, the subtlety in the distinctions may be underappreciated here. This is the thing about changing these terms a bit. Change how they're really working. You change people's perception of those things. Now, I've said the opening salvos were acknowledged a direct, not a proxy, a direct economic and financial war against Russia, not the proxy war. But the celebrities will say on and on, this is a proxy war. That for the purposes of the West, the fighting is a distraction, I've said, and to be used to cover for a multi-purpose laundering mat we watch, which purposes themselves are economic and fiscal plunder. Look very carefully at those two. So now let's see what sanctions are and the consequence. The direct attack was sanctions. What's the consequence? After Brussels unveiled its sanctions, quote, total war against Russia in the spring of 2022, the Baltics have suffered among the most severe recessions in the bloc, facing surging inflation, rising interest rates, and a weakening demand for goods and services. So, there's the acknowledgement that the EU intended total war against Russia when it implemented sanctions directly. Insisted upon by whom, though? The United States, yes. Are we seeing any of these things? Again, if you just listen to that list, are we seeing, in the United States, are we seeing anything such as inflation and higher interest where we live? So that the entity that insisted at home is showing the same elements of problems due to the sanctions. that were a total war attack against Russia. I've also said that sanctions against Russia would be like spitting into a hurricane or a hurricane if and you're needy, and anyone imposing a direct war against Russia would reap that whirlwind because Russia had been preparing for more than a decade prior in earnest, as I reported from the weekly notices given behind the woodshed. And remember, this was also a war against Europe planned by the United States. So what's been the consequence? Latvian state rail carrier Pasazuru Vilciens PV has urged the country's parliament to walk back a planned ban on the purchase of Russian and Belarusian-made spare parts for rolling stock, warning that otherwise its stock of Soviet-made trains would quickly come to a standstill and paralyze the entire railway network. Unlike a reasonable exemption, unless a reasonable exemption is made, PV will only be able to run the rolling stock it owns and operates for so long as it has surplus of spare parts, which in some cases will be in use as early as this spring, the company said, in an appeal to lawmakers shared by local media. So, also, as I said, if you're dependent on a producer, you better be ready for difficulties in the minimum when you attack that producer or breach your agreements with that producer. So, EU's decision to shoot its economy in both feet by introducing its toughest ever sanctions against Russia has brought the bloc's economic growth to a standstill, and the manufacturers leaving Europe in droves are better for better conditions and lower energy bills abroad, but the restrictions have only less well reported on the knockoff effects, too. Remember I just talked about Panama Papers, CIA, the setup for a takedown, and we had talked about Germany being part of that. And look at what's going on here as a setup for a bigger, long-term takedown. And what happens? So why is this little kerfuffle as to whether there's a proxy war, a direct war, important? If the celebritude influencers get people to believe war is only kinetic and in a geographical military theater, kabuki or otherwise, people will not notice the economic war being waged by the United States at home against them, or any of your all governments that are listening in around the world, behind the woodshed, what you're doing to you. People always think in the destruction of lives and the way of life or private economy is over there, and whatever the hardships here are to be tolerated, not preparing to counter them. They'll even cheerlead and zealously promote their next captor in chief without a complaint. In part because therefore there's those of the world that know each one of those clueless better than the clueless know themselves. So I think we can take wise counsel from over there, the things of the world, as we attempt to exist in the world, as exploitative as it, extortive as it is as well, to point, the point being here, protect against being clueless. But more importantly, do the things the clueless won't do. Become truly knowledgeable and take substantive proper action in a multidimensional war being waged against you, mine, body and spirit, and preying on your needs. This is what the ESG sustainability is all about. It's what the government knows to do. They knew to set you out, take your jobs out when they needed to quell the fire of the people, to put them back into control and bring the whole nation into the global parity, as I've been telling you. And no, this is not about train. This story is not about train parts. It's more the story about the railroading you that you're experiencing and the system of which the wheels are about to come off for you. And as I've been also saying over and over, you knows them when you sees them, isn't just about your eyes, but the effects of the unseen, which the they don't have to explain either. You're going to have to take responsibility, every one of you, whatever you is. And calling on the effects of the unseen, from a Siamese twin of exceptional democracies, Ukrainians are God's chosen people, so says Zelensky. Amid nationwide persecution of Orthodox Christians, the Ukrainian president claimed that God is his nation's ally. The Chosen, folks. That sounds similar? Sound familiar? The Chosen. As I said last week, Israel, like Ukraine, because, folks, democracy. Zelensky couldn't contain his exceptionalism here. How much longer do we have to tolerate these exceptionally chosen yellow bus riding psychopaths? Oh, before it gets too old fashioned, Zelensky didn't kill himself. And another self-chosen proponent, the top pro-Jewish organization in the United States has shown that it isn't what it claims to be. Now, I don't think people turn this stuff off. I think they need to be listening to it because this is how people get away with changing words, changing names, changing perception, getting people to agree, and then they go and they continue to do their dastardly deeds in the world. An Anti-Defamation League CEO has made outlandish and harmful claims about students protesting the Israeli war effort in Gaza. The Anti-Defamation League has a long and storied history of attacking people it disagrees with, often Arabs, black people, and queer people. It rightly casts as anti-Semites those who claim that Jews in the U.S. fundamentally have dual loyalty split between America and Israel, while consistently painting Israel's detractors, especially those with Muslim roots, as having the same compromised loyalty. The ADL infamously collaborated with the House Un-American Committee in the 1940s and 50s, adopting a quasi-state role that also favors deeper and unwavering support for Israel. The ADL should be properly identified as a pro-Israel group that also has open ties with the U.S. security state. Greenblatt recently said live on MSNBC that Iran has their military proxies like Hezbollah, and Iran has their campus proxies like these groups, like Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace. He also told Forbes during an interview that he'd really like the FBI to investigate these groups for their supposed, I'll say it again, supposed elevation of Hamas propaganda. Today, this supposed civil rights advocacy organization, 43-year-old leader, appears to be continuing this tradition, though ADL faces a much tougher mission ahead. That's because many Americans, particularly younger ones, are disgusted with the actions of the Israeli state, or at least with those of the far-right government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. What is transpiring in Gaza is nothing short of televised genocide, and it is impossible for any ordinary human being of a decent moral composition not to feel sympathy for Palestinians. Let me offer above there the young looking at this and being disgusted. They also don't have as much terminological programming and connection to those terms as well. And I think we're seeing their spirit come through in that disgust. It's a natural disgust. Greenblatt is evidently desperate to turn the discussion away from wanton slaughter of human beings by the Israeli Defense Forces by making these issue about alleged hate speech and about altercations against Jews on college campuses, even though many of the groups he has baselessly accused of the connection to foreign states and designated terrorist groups are themselves Jewish. We're talking about reframing by term things so that you gain control of the narrative, is exactly what this group does. As I've said, the abusive Zionist propaganda operative should be known as the Anti-Defamation League, being that the two negatives cancel, we can shorten that to the Defamation League. And just like the other exceptional democracy of democracies, the Ukraine, they kill their own, don't they? It's been reported by here, the Worthy News website, a spokesman for Hamas announced that the Israeli-U.S.-Canadian in Gaza, Judy Weinstein, 70, and another unnamed detainee, has succumbed to their wounds following an Israeli-occupied airstrike. One report from The Guardian says Israeli shelling, instead of an airstrike, that targeted the location where she and others were held. It was reported that Judith had died on October 7th, but in point of fact, by Hamas spokesman, she was given the intensive treatment in the hospital and upon her recovery was returned to her place of detention. Then she was murdered by the Israeli second trial. Sounds like the Hannibal directive playing out. To me, how about you? Satan Yehu would rather Israeli hostages die in Gaza to avoid a ceasefire and the PR that Hamas would get from it. And I suppose it would be said, eating their own, as it were. The Zionists are carrying out the cannibal directive. Nothing above these folks. And with another opportunity to enforce the cannibal directive of eating their own, Israel ready to temporary truce with Hamas, says Satan Yehu. Understand how they played this. Understand what's going on. It sounds like a politician to me. We're going to find out the truth of that coming up. Israel wants to release hostages, but will not surrender to the Palestinian militant group, the prime minister said. Surrender, folks. Pretty strong words here. So you'll notice last week's Israeli official sent Hamas a ceasefire proposal which suggests a temporary cessation of hostilities to facilitate an exchange of several dozen hostages with Palestinian prisoners being held in Israeli jails. I guess Mrs. Weinstein will not be one of them. Satan Yehu added that Israel is not ready to accept a situation in which Hamas retains its military capability and remains in control of Gaza, reiterating a position he has struck since the war began 7 months ago. Now, isn't the demand that Ukraine not retain its military capability and the current government remain in control the very same demand Russia lawfully made? That the U.S. condemns Russia but supports, pays for Satan Yehu to make the same demand illegally in Palestine? That wasn't a question. It was very previously reported as well that Israel had given Hamas a week to agree to a ceasefire deal, or it would go ahead and with its military operation in Rafah, as briefed by the Egyptian official on the matter, said Friday. And I'm trying to use sources here in the news to identify. This is just not some reporter somewhere. These are kind of information reported about lots of people being involved. That's what came out. It was going to be something where we're going to have some time to decide. Not hours later, let alone the weekend, the week that was extended. The question asked, did Satan Yehu trash ceasefire deal agreed by Hamas to continue war? Israel Defense Forces, armored units, forcibly occupied the Palestinian side of Rafah crossing with Egypt on May 7th, despite Hamas agreeing to latest hostage and ceasefire proposal a day earlier. The deal would have seen a ceasefire in return for the release of 30 Israelis captured by Hamas armed wing and other militant groups in their breakout from northern Gaza on October 7, 2023. They didn't break out of Palestine, though. You got that? There was no breakout of Palestine. It was broken out of the open-air prison that the belligerent occupier, the Zionists, threw them in without right. Reading on here, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is obviously reluctant to accept the Hamas peace negotiations. Meharan Kamrava, a professor of government of Georgetown University, Qatar, told Sputnik. He has now said that it's not acceptable, largely because his political career would be in serious difficulty once the war ends. And so, for domestic political purposes, particularly in light of the massive demonstrations in Israel in recent days, his political career is in serious jeopardy, Kamrava added. And therefore, if he ends the war, he will be in difficulty. So, not only does the illegal Zionist Federation movement occupation of Palestine masquerading as a Jewish people having no right of self-defense under international law, their leader, reportedly an Eastern European Polish guy, is not acting in any national security capacity if it were available, but to his own private and political security, is how pathological he and those like him are. And remember, Genocider-in-Chief Biden said he is a Zionist, and the House of the Compromised in D.C. are politically, arguably, lawfully Zionist bribed. And we hear that that conflict of interest was declared a unilateral, self-congratulatory, extraordinarily generous deal to Hamas, where we read, Israeli officers insisted that the new agreement contained many new elements that were not part of the deal that was presented to Hamas by the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar 10 days ago with Israel's approval. But a senior U.S. official retorted that American diplomats have been engaged with Israeli counterparts. There have been no surprises. For the genocide-in-chief, there have been no surprises. Such a generous deal, added onto by Hamas, causes them more destruction. The genocide-in-chief knows Netanyahu will balk at peace. So people are murdered while the world watches, despite their protests, under the bought and paid for competent tutelage of the United States government. Cannot be okay. And cannot be okay with the world. I don't care if you're a student, if you're on a campus, or anything. Apparently, though, the guy in the Biden regime that knew how to melt ice resigned. As we read, while Netanyahu did that, he jumps in and fires up Rafah. U.S. froze Israeli ammunition shipments last week. Okay, remember, we're dealing with political creatures. They're not doing things morally. The genocide-in-chief has a problem as well on his side of the equation. And he's completely knowledgeable of what's going on. At least his handlers are. The United States put an ammunition shipment to Israel on hold last week, sending Israeli officials scrambling to understand the reason behind the move, U.S. media reported Sunday. And the incident raised serious concerns inside Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government. The White House declined to comment, the website said. There was reportedly no immediate response from the Pentagon, the State Department, and the Israeli Prime Minister's office. But listen, here's the interesting part, and not that the guy behind the woodshed told you so. In late April, it was reported that a group of more than 90 U.S. lawyers, including at least 20 from the presidential administration, called on the U.S. President Joe Biden to stop military aid to Israel because of its actions in the Gaza Strip, which they said contradict U.S. and international humanitarian law. So let me get this straight. The students protesting at the universities in the land of the free, it didn't say freedom, home of the brave, being beaten, tased, pepper sprayed, shot with rubber bullets, enjoying their civil rights to wrongful extortions of every kind, saying that the actions in the Gaza Strip contradict U.S. and international humanitarian law, and a group of lawyers without the benefits of being beaten, tased, pepper sprayed, shot with rubber bullets, enjoying their civil rights to wrongful extortions of every kind, at the same time sending a letter identifying the same domestic and international wrongs committed by the United States government, has even a hint of an effect, shows the occupying power and undue influence of the judicial branch controlling Bar Association in this Lincoln's Inn post-founding father era of terror, usurping America, does it not? Are we paying attention? Put another way, had the United States followed domestic and international law, the university protest, or whatever political origin and purpose would likely not have happened, or those protesters deserve some sort of Presidential Medal of Honor for peacefully defending the Republic. So where are the state's Bar Association members' attorney generals? Where are they in this war against people, in protecting the defenseless and oppressed? Go to your state laws and go look at the duties of your attorney generals in protecting the defenseless and oppressed, suing the federal government. Where are they in suing the government? To enjoin it, to comply with laws. Is the problem with this country at this point? And whether or not that evidence is who your open-air occupier in America are or is. We tend to think things are over there. I'm trying to show with all my abilities, it comes to me to show you it's right up around your neck. It's drowning us. And yet, with all this power these people have, with all the bravado that we hear, this next story sounds a bit of desperation from one of the most moral, powerful democracies with the self-described most formidable and technologically advanced military powers in the Middle East. Israel will fight with fingernails amid possible halt in U.S. arms supplies. If we have to stand alone, we will stand alone. We will fight with our fingernails if we have to, Netanyahu said in a video address to the nation released on Thursday. All that sounds like the words of a bully, and I understand bullies underneath are cowards. We're going to use our fingertips. We're going to scratch. Yeah, that's as far as where they go. Again, the United States, the genocide in chief, is allowing this. If all they had were their fingers, their fingernails, this would be short-lived. And yet the world watches on that, the very tip of their nails. That's all the world has, that they're holding by the tip of their fingernails right now. That people are going to believe that that's the fact, the truth. In a way, I'm really appalled that people continue to say there's got to be a two-state solution when the agreement, even the first occupation of the agreement, was the Palestinian government would work to assimilate those that were coming in of, let's say, the Jewish persuasion, Zionist aside. And that was going to be a full-size Palestine. And yet, you see what's going on with these psychopaths, these politically oriented creatures. Every one of them. And I don't know how we continue as a nation and think that we're going to do ourselves any good on this. We're watching the destruction through the representatives. When a few representatives are looking around and saying, where's our Congress? And they're in there. It can't be too good. When even some of those are not too pure, like I was saying, Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about, oh, we can't fund Ukraine, but we gotta separate these funding, these appropriation bills, and we gotta send the money to Israel. We still have problems. I don't have a political preference for any of these folks. It's just the absurdity of it all, the disgrace, the nonsense. And they certainly can't be peacemakers appropriating money for war. Now it may be that there's going, let's forget all the questions. Let's just say that there's two factions that have equal rights. It may be that they would have the capacity to fight. It would be everyone's best interest that they don't. That's where diplomacy was supposed to go. And in one regard, with Russia in mind, telling us what the United States was doing against them, and this was also not supposed to happen relative to their diplomacy, why you stopped closing these diplomacy doors, and this starts to get worse and worse, is another type of problem. And the people that I see sitting in the House of the Compromise in Washington, D.C., are incapable, absolutely incapable of doing anything to fix any of this. And so in part, that's reflecting on us. On the other hand, there's maybe, and I'm saying this in the context of the disappointment I have to the response of the population to COVID, the great COVID swindle. We weren't responsive and we still aren't responding. We're still not responsive. No, now we know that everyone, oh, now the truth comes out. We told you the truth. Any one of you, we're telling yourselves the truth. We got behind the woodshed, started reading the black and white, looking around, putting two together. You saw what was going on then. We don't have to wait all this time. Is the problem of the future for people around the world, where we hear governments identifying the United States as not the guy with the white hat anymore? And we think it's out there again. No, they're doing this in order to keep an economy going, that they're destroying at the same time. Let me get back to the beginning just real quick. That's why we look and we see an objective basis. I'm not enamored with a whole lot of anything anymore, but it sure looks like historically and in the documents and people may be a lot more intelligent than we were, that purportedly set up a place called the United States of America had some insights that we've abandoned. And there's some insights that people are not going to let go, and they're trying to bring them back. And I'm not talking, when I say abandoned, I mean it's gone. I'm saying we didn't make them important, like every day in our lives. And when the whole world can watch something going down for politics, let's say a genocide for politics, and there's no way to stop it, the whole entire world is falling. At that point, I don't really know what the answer is, but to each one of us has to start protecting ourselves, get ourselves right. Not that we're wrong, but we're not right if we're engaging a system that the ripple effect allows this. Getting back to gold and silver, and we see the state, we're talking about states' rights, they had a right to coin, mint coin. That should have been going on from day one. As soon as the state got put in, they should have made a mint, and it should have held on forever. That's how important that was, and how far behind we are that we didn't. And that's what I'm talking about. The state cannot use that necessarily. Well, once it's not taxed, they certainly can't, right? They can't use it as anything. And yet it's, again, gold and silver are people's money. You didn't see the system go to that. No, they need it to support their system. Should have been a big clue. And so we're watching destruction in the world. We're watching war in the world. Chaos in the world. You heard a couple stories today about chaos being planned. And so there's got to be an insight. People have to bring a less chaotic sense. And I'm not talking gold and silver coin like it's not something that you invest in for profit. You're using it as a tool. And that's a tool enough, a type of tool that someone else can't use. So an entity. You want to be different than a corporation? Stop using its paper. Stop using all of its benefits. Stop using anything that it's doing and thinking that it's helping the world. That's a euphemism. They're using a nice flowery word to say they're hurting you. And more people are waking up to this. And a lot of people have a bigger vocabulary. I still see a lot of failure. However, it's encouraging to see that there's people changing to understand this. The problem I'm seeing is that's not application. As I've said before over and over, people talk with me, we work through a problem. The things that come up to have to do can only be found while going through that problem. And the principles that you use are not coming from the problem. They have to be in you. And in working through a problem, it's a big difference between what you know and what you do with what you know. In other words, you don't necessarily tell everybody how much you know. That's another tool. It's a hard one. You just want people, well, for me, I just want people to know. However, at times you have to be careful. You don't want to say so much. Some of these news articles just are stunning. They actually will admit, like in this case, you see, this is all just politics. It has nothing to do with morality, ethics, or law. Just do what's right. Nothing to do with religion. It's completely on to someone's motivations for themselves. And I see this reflecting back over to what happened in the Great Kobe Swindle. Now, fear will drive that as well. I started the whole broadcast. The first few content links are, they're telling us that. Well, they fear cancer, so we're going to jump into that. It's profitable because you fear it. Man, the word profit's not about money only. I guess I'll say that. Talk about multiple meanings. Yeah. The profit. It's not just about money. And right now they're bent on our destruction, and the ones that are planning the world. It's hard to me to even talk this way. I don't even understand how someone would do it. I don't have the motivation. Never had the idea to. But there have been people that have decided, maybe even it's a game, and we're going to see if we can pull this off. And they're doing it. Maybe that's what happens when you focus yourself. Because why? They also know no one's going to resist. And if they make it too abstract, no one knows how to exist, or to start to resist. So, I'm hoping that we take, I just keep looking every week. I keep looking and saying, where are we going to step in? I don't mean irrationally. I don't mean knee-jerk. Where are we going to start methodically? The people. Throwing down our differences and saying, what do I need to be better in the world, to do better in the world locally? And that's the thing, locally. You don't have to worry about the rest of the world. But you do have to consider, like, how are you going to get your food next time? How are you going to, what medium do you use in exchange? What are you, how are you interacting with people? That's private. And that's private working with people that you can. To me, that's the harder part, because I just found out that people that can be your friends for many decades can turn on you. And so I have to figure out a trust mechanism, if you will, that will be bypass that in the future once I escape from the condition that I've been thrust into. It doesn't mean that the world stops. But it doesn't mean that if I've escaped, it changes that world. And we're told that this world's going to a bad place, so we better, but there's going to be the example that will show how it should have been different. And in a way, behind my mind, back deep, I was hoping that little guy in me wanted to say, yeah, America is the beacon. We, the people, can do this. We can stand up right now. Here's the easy answer. We don't have to fight amongst each other. Yet we didn't opt for that. There's a real cold view to see in the world for us. And this is our neighbors. So we have a lot of work to do. Why I'm not so sure of a lot of things, except we need to start working from an objective basis. You can't be in an objective basis if you, let's say, gold and silver coin. I'm not so good at the knowing the religions, but there's a discussion through the religions that speak to it that gold and silver are coins that you use that's good. Nothing else is. There's a wisdom about that. Whether I fully understand it or not, there's a wisdom about that. People are gravitating back to that. It's what the governments went away from. And so that all these should be clues that they're not just a bit troubling. And I don't know what more to add. There's so much we could justify going to that. I'm suggesting when you hear little simple statements like the Fed has to take gold and silver on their ledger side as assets and can't take them as debt instruments, that should tell you about all you need to know. So in that system, it's a debt system. Debtor can never be a master. So I say master, not a debtor be. We may have debts. We have debts of obligation. We do not want to be working with debt instruments. Dead instruments, death instruments, debt instruments. And that's what they've got us into. And then it's going to translate into digital, which is really nothing. It's vaporware. And yet your life will be controlled on it. And yet we see the carriers already. Our lives are already tracked, located, and tracked and sold. Certainly we are the product. We've always been, likely, the consumer. Am I against phones? Am I against digital currencies? No. I am against them being used against me, if not you, the listener. I don't like that they have these capacities to be used against us. And I do take quite a bit of time to not allow that to happen, but that's not the tide. That's not the tide is seemingly going away from us on that. And so there's not enough of us. It's not a joke to say, can you live without your phone for an hour, a day, 2 days, a week, a month? Can you do it? If you can, great. Keep that skill. It's not going to be a very pleasant world, though, when you have to do it like that. Not having a phone, not using a phone, doesn't mean you're existing very well. If everything around you has determined that everyone's got to go the other way, and they didn't hold to the principles, they didn't understand the kinds of things I'd be talking about that you even know. That's why you're listening, likely, for any length of time. Just look around. There's just not that many of us. There are reactionaries, and I'm not saying it's bad. Sometimes you have to act and respond in self-defense. But a lot of that's being aware, and being aware not to be someplace. Don't be in the place that you have to be responding like that. I think we're being given a little bit of time. Not that there's given any time given. I think the writing's been pretty clearly on the wall. I think there's been good action, 45 states going to gold and silver. Just to start, just get yourself into something, even though it's unfamiliar, get yourself into, you know, even silver coins, start using them. Start working out how you're going to work that out. So when more questions come down, you at least have that as muscle memory, agreements, happy times to rely on for, with other people. Because as you see, the world of the world works on fear, and it's profitable. So consider these things as I've been talking to you. Understand, I don't talk about the news. Like I said, it's not that story on rail, the railway and the parts. It's not about the trains. It's about a relationship, a broken relationship, and what starts to happen. And we're living on the narrative side of that. And yet we forget that is our future. We're watching trains that aren't going to have parts. Understand the extension into the future that they want is there's none of the stuff that they were talking about breaking down because you're in a 2-minute city. You're going to walk. Forget the train. Forget all that. You're living austerity. You're living the future that they want for you. And it all started when you abandoned the things that people need and principles and morals and gave over to someone who was the expert that we'll all chide, we'll laugh at, but we still give over to the expert. And I say that when you're doing that, when you did not outwardly object. As I thought, again, the great Comey's window would allow us to do. Get us back into the practice of it. I think something I said today was helpful. Rethink what's going on. Really consider what we really have some fast things to start doing. There are movements. There's momentum going. Jump on those things to help you. Find out what you might need. Really look deep into the future. And this was BTW RLM 576. And I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
Echoes call the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Hide a cantaloupe bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon. Call behind the woodshed stand.